Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, there was a lot of news around the National Football League, and you can start right here in Tampa Bay, where COVID has certainly taken a bite out of the Buccaneers. Bruce Arians, their head coach now, is suffering from this. I did manage to exchange some text messages with Bruce. He says he has a just a bit of that nagging cough. And we noticed it. I noticed it on Monday during the Zoom call that we had. When I asked about it, I was told there was a lot of colds going around and things like that. It turns out that he did test positive. He is quarantining at home. He is isolating. Of course, 69-year-old, immune compromised, 3-time cancer survivor, all of that. But he seems to be doing very, very well. And with the new protocols, I don't think it's completely, if I do the math right, it's now 5 days. If you don't have any symptoms, if you're asymptomatic, you can potentially return or to negative tests with 24 hours in between. So not completely out of the question that he couldn't coach on Sunday, but if he can't, and even during the week, Harold Goodwin, who is the assistant head football coach, does the run game coordination. He will take over Bruce Arians' duties during the week. And I'll say this about Bruce. He has his staff, which is why he's back to coaching in the NFL. And not to minimize what he does, because he absolutely sets the tone for the entire franchise, week in, week out, tells the players what is important and I'm sure is involved at some level of game planning. So he will be missed. But that staff has been together now, some of them for 30 years. And when you have offensive coordinator like, Byron Leftwich, when you have Todd Bowles and all the guys, Clyde Christensen and people that have been with him sometimes for up to 30 years, going back to Temple days, it's a heck of a lot easier for business as usual during the week. And also that quarterback, Tom Brady's not going to let them slump off at all. But it didn't stop with Bruce Arians. They also have two corners. Here we go again with the secondary, Sean Murphy Bunting, Jamel Dean, also in COVID protocol. Again, the new adaptation of the CDC rules, 5 days. They have an opportunity to come back, but we don't know what their availability will be at this point. I would think you'd consider them maybe to be out. They do get Breshad Perriman back from COVID last week. He missed 2 games. Of course, he was the hero of that Buffalo Bills overtime win a couple of weeks ago. This is kind of going to be the story as we head really not just into Sunday, but then you think about the impact in the playoffs. Carson Wentz with the Indianapolis Colts, who is not vaccinated, testing positive for COVID. They need to win some games to assure their playoff status. They have an opportunity to win that division. They have to go with Sam Ehlinger. So this is a huge story in Indianapolis, and one that is not surprising, because there were a couple quarterbacks who opted not to be vaccinated. And, certainly the time, and again, I think the fact that they're switching to 5 days may help him. But unvaccinated players had to have a mandatory 10-day period that you were off. And so the potential was for him to miss a couple games. And we don't know the severity of his illness, but certainly you take a quarterback like Carson Wentz out of the Indianapolis Colts, and that's going to take a bite out of them. So this will be a story on all the way through the playoffs. And I think whether it's college football, pro football, society in general, we're just going to have to do the best we can and see how they navigate this. But with the Bucs, we know Mike Evans had already been on the COVID list. Of course, he's dealing with a hamstring injury. They've had these hiccups along the way. And, I think the team that manages this the best, sort of like last year, maybe even more so because this particular variant is so contagious that everybody seems to be getting it. I know a ton of people that have it myself. It's just going to be something that they're going to have to navigate and hope that it doesn't infect, key elements of your team. And certainly, Tom Brady, I'd keep him in a jar somewhere if I were the Buccaneers, because you don't want to lose him. These last 2 games matter. They're still fighting for playoff position. They still have a chance at a higher seed. They're currently number 4. a fairly reasonable chance of moving into three, maybe even two if the Rams were to lose. The Rams play at Baltimore this Sunday. Looks like Lamar Jackson will be back. So the Bucs have plenty of incentive to continue winning until we get to that final week and we kind of figure out what their seeding status is. So lots going on with the Buccaneers. A lot was going on in Amway Arena.
Don't forget Byron Leftwich and Todd Bowles are been asked permission to talk to several teams around the NFL.
They have, and I think that it was expected. You know, there is a period that started yesterday, as we do this podcast, actually started on Tuesday, where teams can virtually interview teams that have head coaching openings. You would consider the Raiders one of those teams, although they say they're going to wait until the end of the season. They're still in a playoff race. Rich Bisaccia is coaching them. But the Jacksonville Jaguars are not waiting. They have asked to interview a lot of coaches, potential head coaches throughout the league that are current assistants. They can do that virtually. Both Byron Leftwich and Todd Bowles are on that list. And, you know, it seems almost too obvious, right, with Byron Leftwich, a former first-round pick, seventh overall pick of the Jaguars, played there for four or five seasons as a quarterback. You've got a young quarterback in Trevor Lawrence. Byron has benefited greatly from being around Tom Brady these past two seasons. The amount of football he's probably learned from him alone would make him a great head coaching candidate, and he was on his way to doing that before Brady arrived. So, and Todd Bowles, you know, I mean, for years and years, one of the best defensive coordinators in football, was a head coach with the New York Jets, only had one winning season there. He certainly deserves another chance. I've talked to both those guys. They're both completely happy in Tampa Bay in their current roles. I think that's particularly true of Todd Bowles, who, you know, is at peace with the fact that he got to be a head coach. He'd love to be one again. You know, he's had some opportunities. Last year, he interviewed for the Atlanta Falcons job. I don't know who's a stronger candidate, quite frankly. Byron Leftwich is coming from a different place than most head coaches just because he's a former NFL quarterback. He's made tons of money. He doesn't have an agenda. He had to be talked into coaching in the first place. He spent about 5 years just playing golf and enjoying his life, and Bruce Arians brought him in as a quarterback's coach in Arizona. He eventually became an offensive coordinator there for 1 year without Bruce Arians when Bruce retired, and now he's back, of course, doing that with the Bucs these last three seasons and has done an unbelievable job. I think he would make a great head coach because I think he has the communication skills and the demeanor to handle. You know, that job is not about X's and O's all the time. It's really about setting a tone. It's about who you can hire on your staff. I think that Byron knows a lot of people in football, would be great at it. He'd certainly be great for that young quarterback in Jacksonville if that's what they decide to do, just because of the fact that there are very few, if none, right, head coaches in the National Football League who have stood, you know, behind center. I mean, Frank Reich did it in Indianapolis, but there's not many guys who have seen the game, you know, behind the center that can help the quarterback in the NFL the way somebody who's actually done it like Byron Leftwich. So we'll see where that goes, if any place. I know they're focused on winning against the Jets. They've got two games. They can improve their position, as I mentioned earlier. So these are important games, even though the matchup would seem to favor the Bucs. When you start losing more guys from the secondary again, we don't know the status of Antoine Winfield Jr., who was coming off that foot injury. So we'll have more updates on that, you know, throughout the week. So that's big. We'll get into this later. John Madden has died, the legendary broadcaster and Hall of Fame football coach at 85. The impact he's had, all the tributes are out there. You know, that's something we can certainly talk about, you know, in tomorrow's show. But 30 years as an analyst, he called 11 Super Bowls. He's also the only broadcaster to work for all four networks, which is amazing to me. And, of course, the Mattio video game, released in 1988, just, you know, has touched generations of football fans and educated them, if you've played that game and who hasn't. So John Madden gone at 85 years old. That happened yesterday. All the tributes are everywhere. I did want to talk about real briefly, Steve, you were at Amalie Arena. Welcome back, Braden Point. You had two goals and an assist in your first game.
This is like Nikita Kucherov coming back in the playoffs last season, where the first game just, wow. I mean, Braden Point's speed seemed like it just carried the team. It was like the team was just following him because he was flying around the ice. And watching him handle the puck, you realize what this team has been missing. when you see him out there with, you know, missing Point and missing Kucherov. And meanwhile, while Point was out of the lineup, the team went 11-2-1. It's incredible. But Braden Point, with several players out, like Anthony Cirelli and Mikhail Sergachev, and you don't have Andre Vasilevskiy or Brian Elliott. You had Max Lagesse in net. You needed a Braden Point to help get that game started because the rest of the team seemed like it was a little slow early. And Derek Lalonde, who's filling in for John Cooper, talked about, you know, Point just kind of carries you into that fight. And you know, he just drags you there as a team. And he was, I mean, he could have had 4, 5, or 6 goals in that game. I mean, he scored 2, but he had a lot of great chances. And just incredible to watch him play. It's like he hasn't missed a beat. You know, Derek Lalonde talked about, you know, he had hockey taken away from him for a while, and he's still got that youthful kid feeling like, I just want to go play hockey. And that's kind of his personality anyway. And, boy, did he ever play hockey on Tuesday night. That was fun to watch. And Corey Perry gets another sixth attacker goal against his former team, Montreal. It's 2 this year he's had, both leading to wins for the Lightning.
It's amazing. Lagesse, they didn't play much defense around him. I think they probably could have played a little better. But, heck, when you can win a game with your third goaltender, you'll take it. 12th overtime game this year, Steve. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
And one other quick note, and this was a Stanley Cup rematch, but the Canadiens are a pretty bad team this year for lots of reasons. They've had some injuries. Shea Weber's gone. Carey Price isn't playing right now. A lot of reasons, but now, after that game, the Lightning have played 31 games. The Canadiens have played 32 games. If you do a head-to-head standings, the Lightning are 15 games ahead of the Canadiens.
Goodness gracious.
The Lightning are 15 games over 500. The Canadiens are 15 games under 500. And that's a Stanley Cup rematch, 30 games in the season.
Like what they've done with the injuries they've had to have the best, you know, the most points in the NHL, it's unbelievable. And you can just, now that they have Braden Point back, Nikita Kucherov will be coming back sometime later this month. I got to believe the rest of the NHL is going, goodness gracious, how are we ever going to get past the Lightning as they get those guys healthy? So, yeah, pretty big win for them. And a fun game, from what I understand, to witness as well, despite all the injuries and all the COVID situations.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, best time of the week, best time of the year right now with the college football national championships coming up here shortly. The semifinals, we'll break all of that down. Matt Baker joins us now from Texas, where he's actually trying to get a little family time before the Cotton Bowl pops up here on New Year's Eve. Matt, how's it going down there?
It's going well. Like you said, trying to get some family time in between a little bit of work. Had yesterday, or as we record this yesterday, so Tuesday off. So what did I do? I took my kid to a random college football bowl game. We went to see the First Responder Bowl. Why are we laughing? Between Air Force and Louisville. Air Force threw the ball pretty well for a triple option team. Louisville's quarterback, Malik Cunningham, fun to watch. And, pretty cheap day of entertainment at the SMU Stadium.
I have to admit, I didn't follow who won the tilt there. I've got to believe Louisville may have prevailed.
Air Force 31-28. Louisville had a
really?
Chance to...
Wow.
Yeah, Air Force threw the ball extremely well. They kept getting guys open because I think Louisville wasn't as prepared for it. And Louisville could not get a stop in the end, the last second half, really, to save their game. So Air Force was able to prevail. And clearly what was the most interesting and important game to be played in the DFW Metroplex this season.
No doubt. The Serve Pro First Responder Bowl was the one that you saw. And I think there should be a rule. I know a lot of these academies, military academies, run the triple option, run the ball primarily. If you're Air Force, doesn't it require you to throw the ball? I've never quite understood that. Like, you should just do it through the air. I don't know.
You're exactly right. How do we get on this rabbit hole? My brother and I were talking during the game. Can you name an Air Force quarterback ever?
No. We can't. Should be able to. Can name a name a Navy one.
I can't too. Air Force's all-time leading passer, according to a two-second Google search, Sean Carney. Dave Zebart was number two. Tim Jefferson, number three. Rich Haney is number four. I've never heard of any of those people.
Wow. Certainly none that I can recall going to the NFL. That's for sure. Well, we got more important bowl games,
yes,
if that's imaginable.
Yes,
and I'm glad you got to enjoy that with your son and his cousin there. Okay, so we'll get to certainly, you know, this weekend it's all about the national semifinals and some matchups that, you know, I mean, in the past we've had lopsided games, but I think we talked about this earlier, Matt. Notre Dame has gotten blown out in these games. You know, some big brand programs. And it's going to start with Cincinnati against Alabama. I was listening to an interview with Luke Fickell, who said that, you know, he's trying to build what amounts to a top 10 program, you know, something that is consistently in the top 10, that hopefully this won't be a one-off. But they've made it this far. They certainly deserve it. Undefeated team. I mean, the thing he said is that he doesn't think his players will be in awe of Alabama. And I think that's a real thing. I think that, you know, on this stage, you could go out there, see the red helmets and go, oh, boy, you know, we just don't have a chance against this program. I don't think Cincinnati's going to be like that.
I don't think they are either, and I think in some ways they might be relaxed here because there's zero pressure on them, right? Like, I don't think they're trying to carry the flag for the group of five or anything like that. And when you think about how much pressure they felt during the course of the season, and they've more or less said this at times, where not only did they have to win, but they had to win convincingly, right? Where people like me were dinging them because they had a close win over Tulsa and dinging them because they didn't blow out USF and things like that. So they not only had to win, they had to win convincingly. And if they didn't win by three scores or four scores, well, this isn't very good. This team's not going to make the playoff. But at this point, all that stuff is gone. Cincinnati is a very good team, at least a very good team. You know, we'll see what happens with them kind of in the long term. And Luke, what you said with Luke Fickell wanting to be a top 10 program, we'll see what happens when Desmond Ridder leaves, because they've got a very, very, very accomplished college quarterback. I, as a general rule, I hate the whole using wins as a stat for pitchers or quarterbacks, but dude's won like 44 games or something like that. And,
wow.
That counts for something. That shows the experience that he has. So I definitely give them a puncher's chance. And I think some of it is because, like you said, they're not going to be awed by Alabama. I think they know that they belong. And then also that the pressure that they felt for really most of the season, that's gone. Anything beyond here is kind of gravy.
Yeah, indeed, they do have sort of house money to play with. I guess you look at matchups, and when you think about Alabama, of course, you think about their Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. You think about their receivers, particularly a guy like Jameson Williams. I was listening to Todd Blackledge, who thinks that he believes that Cincinnati has the ability to try to play some press man coverage against those receivers and might have the secondary that can do it and force some really tight throws.
Yeah, I agree with that. Sauce Gardner is as good a cornerback as there is in the country. Kobe Bryant was just as, you know, arguably as good, if not better, this year. So those, and, you know, you start with those two guys at corner, and they're going to be able to give you an awful, awful lot. Cincinnati had probably the best pass defense in the country this year. I'm just looking at some of the stats here. They had the highest or the lowest opposing passing rating. I think it's like we're number two in yards per game. So that defense is legit. And they've got some dudes who can get after the quarterback too. 21 Sanders is very, very good. Cincinnati's thing is they just don't have the depth. But you take those top guys, a lot of them could play on Bama. Maybe just about every starter could at least contribute at Alabama. So, and in particular with Bama's offense, passing offense against Cincinnati's passing defense, yeah, I think they stack up well. And they're going to have to play very, very well. Alabama's run game wasn't as good as you'd expect this year, but they can still make some plays. But, you know, with Bryce Young and the receivers they have, the talent there, that's how Bama's going to try and win the game. So if Cincinnati can maybe get a pick, because that's the other component to this too with the Bearcats, Alabama's going to have to screw up. Bama is so tremendously talented. It's going to take a couple maybe fluky plays, interception, pick six, scoop and score, fumble kickoff or muff punt. It's going to take stuff like that, I think, for Cincinnati to be able to push ahead. And some of that, you know, there's a good chance something like that can happen on the pass defense with as good as the guys that Cincinnati has.
How good is Cincinnati's offense? In other words, can they move the ball consistently? Can they protect the quarterback, you think, against this Alabama front?
I think they've got some very good weapons. Again, Desmond Ridder is a very accomplished quarterback. He might be a first-round pick. If not, he's a day-two guy. And when you can start with – you've got a first-round quarterback or potential first-round quarterback, that's a very good place to start with any team in the country. I don't care who you are. Jerome Ford, the running back, I mean, he was an All-America caliber guy. When I filled out my All-America team, I had eight guys that I was looking at for running back spot, and he was one of them. He's a very, very good player. He runs hard, and he can be explosive. You know, people this week were calling him a complete back, and I don't think I disagree with him. So you got two really good pieces right there. And you know, they've got some weapons at receiver, and they can use the tight ends well. My question's the offensive line. Alabama's front is not like 2011 Alabama front or whatever, but it's still a very good front. Will Anderson is a game wrecker on the outside, and they've got some dudes on the inside as well. So that's really going to decide the game, I think. Because again, I think Alabama's defense could or offense could have some trouble against Cincinnati's defense, but if Cincinnati's offensive line, which is big, but it's okay from what I've seen, it's okay. They're going to have to play really, really well. And if they can play really well, give Desmond Ridder time, give Jerome Ford holes to run through, I think Cincinnati's got a real chance here. But you could see that matchup easily going the other way too, where Alabama's front just manhandles Cincinnati's line, and that would be how the game gets out of hand.
I still think, you know, obviously it's a big edge to Alabama just because they're Alabama and their experience at this level in these games, in these situations. I want to say Cincinnati, and I'm not a better. I think they're about a two-touchdown underdog. So where would this rank in terms of college football upsets if Cincinnati were able to do this?
Where would it rank? It would be very, very high. Just like bowl games? Because, I mean, like App State over Michigan, you know, that's going to be one of the highest ever.
Yeah. Boise State beating Oklahoma type thing.
Boise, Oklahoma is the other one that immediately came to mind because mm-hmm. that kind of helped. I don't want to say it ushered in a new era or anything like that, but that was one that really started to give more respect to the group of five teams than the non-Oklahomas and Alabamas of the world.
Right, right.
If they were able to do this, though, this would be. I mean, let's face it, it would be massive. Just because of the discrepancy in terms of money, in terms of talent, mm-hmm. in terms of staff size, all that tradition, all that stuff. David and Goliath isn't fair because Cincinnati is they're a very good program. But there are some David and Goliath tendencies here just because of the way Alabama has ruled the sport for the last decade, whatever. And again, those built-in advantages where they make so much more money from the SEC than Cincinnati makes from the AAC. That lets you have – I mean, Alabama's got two former NFL head coaches on their offensive staff, right? Like, it's absurd the way that they are able to build things. And if Cincinnati is able to go in and knock them off with the way the group of five has been treated by the playoff committee, you know, since the dawn of the playoff, it would be massive. And honestly, I think it would be really, really good for the sport. College basketball is at its best in the tournament when you've got, you know, Gonzaga making a run years ago and the Butlers and Valparaiso beating Ole Miss with Bryce Drew's miracle shot. That's what makes it cool when you have some of those Cinderella stories. And this is as close as college football can get to a Cinderella right now. And that's why, yeah, it would be absolutely massive if they were able to pull this off.
Well, look forward to this game for sure. The one that I'm even more excited about in some ways, and of course, and you'll be at the Cotton Bowl for this first game, but the second one, Michigan and Georgia, I have my doubts, and I don't know why this is sort of – look, I'm a big Todd Monken fan. I, you know, was around him for several years here in Tampa Bay, tried to make something out of Jameis Winston, has done a good job at Georgia. There's something – look, Stetson Bennett is one of the better stories in college football, right? Mm-hmm. What he has done, you know, for that Georgia team, stepping in, he's earned what he's got, and that is a start in this national semifinal. But he can struggle at times, and against a good to sometimes really good Michigan defense, is this arena, is any of this going to be too big for him? You know, we saw him against Alabama, maybe not play his best. How much of that will be a carryover? What do you think about Stetson Bennett in a game of this magnitude?
I don't feel great about it. I don't feel great about it.
Okay.
I give him credit for the way he improved from last year to this year, because he improved a lot. The Stetson Bennett that struggled against Florida was not the same one that came out and blew out Florida. There was a lot of progress there. But he's limited. There's a reason he was a walk-on. And again, he's a good player. But to win a national championship in this era, you have to either have a very good to great quarterback, or you have to be loaded everywhere else. The last mediocre, only good quarterback to win a title was Jake Coker for Alabama, the Florida State transfer in 2015 when they beat Clemson. Everybody else has had at least one, sometimes two, really good quarterbacks that they played. You know, think about Alabama against Atlanta against Georgia and Atlanta in the 2017 title game. They went from, you know, Jalen Hurts wasn't cutting it. They bench him. They put in some Tua guy, and the rest is history. So they go from one quarterback who's starting in the league to another quarterback who's starting in the league.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's Alabama, and that's why they're Alabama. But I think this general thought holds, where Jalen Hurts was more limited and they brought in somebody who could, you know, take the top off, and we saw that on the final throw to Devontae Smith for the touchdown that won it. So I don't know that Stetson's good enough to win a title, or that Georgia is good enough around him to win a title. Georgia's receivers are not great. They're not. There's some talent there, but over the course of the year, and really the last couple of years, they haven't gotten it done at a high enough level to where you can have just an okay quarterback, because the receivers are going to ball out, make all sorts of plays. That's not Georgia. I pulled up the transcript. Something that Kirby Smart was asked about in July at SEC Media Days. You look at you look at the teams that have won the national championship recently. They're most dynamic on offense and at the skill positions. And he was asked specifically about some of the guys that they brought in who have not been able to contribute this year. You look at Stetson Bennett. Is he a dynamic quarterback? No. And that's going to be Georgia's limiting factor here, because their defense is going to be really, really good. What happened against Alabama was an anomaly. That's not the Georgia defense. They had a bad game against Alabama. That happens. So I think Georgia's defense is going to play really well. And then it's going to be up to the offense, and particularly Stetson Bennett, to see whether he can push them over the top. Maybe they can get by with him against Michigan. And if they're going to have a chance of beating most likely Alabama, but potentially Cincinnati, they're going to have to be able to make some big throws. And I don't know that Stetson can do it. I'm not saying they need to bench him and bring in JT Daniels if he's healthy, but that's the move that Saban used to beat him in the national championship game a couple years ago. And that's something that's still in the back of my mind.
That would be interesting, and I don't think it's that far fetched that if he struggles, that you see JT Daniels. I think Monken would be willing to do that, and especially if it goes bad early and they start to fall behind. We know what Michigan wants to do. They want to run the football with.
Let's roll that back just one second. You're right. Todd Monken might be willing to do that. My question is whether Kirby Smart would be willing to do that.
That's a good point. Yeah, and he's that coach, right?
Justin Fields ended up being an accomplished college quarterback, yes, and is doing
pretty
something
good
in the NFL. Like he had he has some talent. And Kirby did not use him. They used him sparingly in the one season, and he stuck with Jake Fromm. And I get it. You stick with your guy. Fromm, it's not like Fromm was a bum, right? I mean, right. He took him to the national championship game, and if Georgia defends on 2nd and 26, Kirby Smart has a national title because of Jake Fromm. So it's not like Fromm was a bum, but Justin Fields was so talented, and we saw what he did at Ohio State. And you know, you don't be a top 20 draft pick. That doesn't happen if you're a bum. So he hasn't been willing to make that switch in the past. And I wonder if he thinks any differently now. That's the question that I have. I'm sorry. Yeah. You were talking about Michigan.
No, it's a good point because, listen, you got one bite of the apple here, you know, and if he's loyal to Stetson Bennett, if he's getting the reps, if he's, you know, that's how they've gotten to this point this far, he may stick with them. And at the end of the day, it's a head coach's call. We know that Michigan wants to run the football with Hassan Haskins and Blake Corum. These are two guys that Haskins went over 1,200 yards. Corum's close to 1,000, I think. And yet, the Georgia's defense is stout, as you mentioned. It will be to try to force Cade McNamara into beating them with his arm. Do you think they can stop the Michigan running game? And do you think McNamara can actually make plays with his arm if that's the case?
Yes, I think they can. I think they can stop the run game. I feel fairly good about Georgia's defense there. They've given up more than 130 yards on the ground precisely once this year. And that was to Florida in a game that was not close. They've given up 3 rushing touchdowns all season. Georgia's defense has. I feel very good about them. That front is nasty. And again, we all have in the back of our mind the last time we saw them against Alabama when they were not, you know, they didn't play well. I think that was more about the matchup. That was more about the game plan that they did not execute and Alabama did, more than an indictment of, oh my God, this Georgia defense was a complete fraud. I think that was a one game thing. So, yeah, I think Georgia's going to be able to stop the run. Then, like you said, the question is, can Cade McNamara and the Michigan offense do enough against it? And I'm not sure that they can. I don't have a great, X's and O's reason why. I'm just not 100% sold on the Michigan passing attack yet. And, we'll see what they're able to do. But my gut tells me I think Georgia's defense is going to be able to contain Michigan's offense as a whole well enough.
Well, I'm trying to read the tea leaves here, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think that you're leaning towards a rematch of the SEC championship game between Alabama and Georgia, this time for the national championship.
Correct. That's what my gut tells me. It's usually the teams with the most talent that win. I've said that once or 1,000 times on here. The guy with it's the team with the dudes, and Georgia has a ton of dudes, and Alabama has a ton of dudes, and Nick Saban, obviously, we know what he's done over the years. That speaks for itself. But Kirby has not gotten over the hump, but he is still a good coach with good coaches on that staff. There are reasons to be hesitant, particularly about Georgia. The fact that Dan Lanning's the new head coach, at Oregon and the DC at Georgia, that's always a weird transition. That kind of can mess with things. But when I look at it, I think Georgia is a better version of Michigan. And I don't think that's a good matchup for the Wolverines. And then Cincinnati's been a great story. They're a very good team. As you talked about, and as I think I talked about last week, don't use this as a referendum for a group of five. Do not do that. Washington got blown out by Alabama in a semifinal in Atlanta. I was there. Notre Dame has struggled in playoff games. I think Clemson blew out Ohio State in a playoff game. Florida State got trucked by 39 points against Oregon in a playoff game. Alabama blew the crap out of Michigan State in a playoff game in this very stadium. So don't view that as a referendum, because blowouts happen in the semifinals. It's one of the issues with the playoff, and I have guesses why, but it's neither here nor there. So do not view this as a referendum on Cincinnati and the group of five. View this as a one game, this Cincinnati team against this Alabama team, because I would hate for the playoff power brokers to try to make something out of this when they're figuring out how to expand the playoff to 12. Well, see, Cincinnati couldn't handle it. Therefore, every group of five teams sucks, and we need to make sure that a mediocre Pac-12 team gets in. No, don't do that. This is one game, and view it as one game, and hopefully it's going to be an entertaining one.
I hope so. And regardless, I think whether they lose by two or by 20 or more, Cincinnati earned their way here. You know,
no question.
They did what they needed to do, and had other teams taken care of their business, they probably wouldn't be in this game. But they won every game on their schedule. They had some better wins than other teams, and the fact is they went undefeated. So whether they prevail or get blown out, I think you're right. It doesn't matter. Big brand teams, big brand programs have lost, and lost by a large margin, as you just mentioned, in these games. And so hopefully, I'm sure there will be plenty of squawking about it, and those that don't want to see anything but the blue bloods in there will say some stuff. But they certainly earned their way here, and hopefully it'll be entertaining, both those games. We've got games. Well, first of all, let's address this. I got up this morning as we do this tape this podcast on a Wednesday for Thursday morning. Another bowl game had been canceled, the Holiday Bowl. I guess at a very late hour, UCLA, without much warning, said that they can't make it because of the COVID outbreak in their program. We're seeing this throughout all of college football, all of society. Certainly the NFL is dealing with that locally here. Bruce Arians, a bunch of players with the Bucs now. So it is a big story in all of sports and in the world. But how messy could this get here in the next couple of days?
Very messy. It's so weird. Like between opt outs and COVID stuff, I don't know who's playing in the games anymore. To mm-hmm. be honest mm-hmm. with you, it's all very yeah. very confusing. You know, you look at a team like Ohio State that's had a bunch of opt-outs. If they've got some, and I'm just guessing here, but every team in the country probably has some COVID issues. So you add in the opt-outs at Ohio State, and like they could lose handily to Utah, and I would not be surprised in the Rose Bowl. Mm-hmm. This is just something that everybody's dealing with. College football has been scrambling. I think it's five games that have been canceled. The favorite example is the Sun Bowl. You know, Miami ended up having to bail on the Sun Bowl because they didn't think they could play. And I'm not begrudging anybody for any of that, just to be clear.
Right.
And then Boise State had to bail on the Arizona Bowl. So Central Michigan was in Tucson, I think it was, 3-4 hour drive from El Paso. So, you know, them in Washington State said, you know what, why don't you come over here and play a game? So now Central Michigan, on like 3 or 4 days prep, is going to end up playing Washington State. Three or four game day preparation, because obviously they had been practicing. But that's just one of the random things. So now Jim McElwain's coaching against Washington State in the Sun Bowl. It's actually a very nice bowl. That's just the 2020 weirdness that has unfortunately carried over to the end of 2021. And I'm hoping 2022, we don't have to deal with any of that. And then the other wild card here is, what about the playoff? I have not heard of any sort of outbreaks or issues that would affect, you know, any of the four teams substantially, but the way it's sweeping through the country, would anybody be surprised? No.
No.
And then what about if something happens, in the layoff between one of the semifinals and the national championship game? That's one of the kind of drawbacks of having that extra time. So
yeah,
I really hope nothing like that happens, but I certainly wouldn't rule it out either, unfortunately.
Of the New Year's Six bowls, and there are some interesting matchups, I think. Which one of these? You mentioned Ohio State with the opt-outs. They play in the Rose Bowl game against Utah, who's been very, very good, particularly down the stretch. I think the Sugar Bowl will be very interesting, Baylor against Ole Miss. Break some of those down for me and tell me which ones that you would be worth watching if you were at home on New Year's Day.
Yeah, the Rose Bowl's always interesting. I mean, it's the Rose Bowl, the beautiful sure. scene and all that. As far as the matchups, I mean, Ohio State's still going to have a lot of talent. They're one of the handful of programs that recruits at a high level. again, I'm not viewing this as a referendum on Ohio State and how good they were. No, they had a bunch of dudes leave. I'm not looking into anything in that game other than the future for Ohio State, what some of their young guys look like. And then from the Utah perspective, them having a chance to end the season well. They started really poorly, and then they figured out their quarterback situation. With Cam Rising, let's not forget too, Utah opens against Florida in the Swamp next year. So if you want to get an early scouting report on what the Gators are going to face, they're going to face this Utah team that's very physical, that's got some talent and that played really well at the end of the year. Notre Dame, Oklahoma State in the Fiesta Bowl is a good one.
I like it. Yeah.
Yeah, just because they haven't been as hit by as the opt-outs and everything by some of the as compared to some of the other teams. And those are two fairly good names. If Oklahoma State gets, you know, an extra foot on the last play against Baylor, Cincinnati's not in the playoff. But instead, this is a very nice consolation game. Styles, what is it? Styles make fights, something like that. Sorry, I haven't had enough coffee this morning. So that's the matchup with Baylor and Ole Miss in the Sugar Bowl. Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin's going to try to score 1,000 points and take a bunch of chances. And Baylor's a lot more defensive-minded under Dave Aranda, and that's how they were able to win the Big 12. So that's, I think, a very interesting matchup as well, with Baylor's very good defense against Ole Miss's very good offense, how that kind of shakes out against two teams that are and two programs that are headed under the right direction under their coaches.
Yeah, it should be good weekend, obviously, of college football, and then the national championship playoff semifinals, of course, on New Year's Eve, the Orange Bowl. You'll be there. I'm sorry, you'll be at the Cotton Bowl, my bad. You'll be at the Cotton Bowl, Alabama, Cincinnati, and then that will be followed at 7:30, Orange Bowl, Michigan, and number 3, Georgia, and then we will have our national championship matchup. So we're almost to the end of college football, but this weekend is a great one for sitting around welcoming in the new year. And hopefully, Matt, happy new year to you. Hopefully 2022 will be even better. We'll get past the craziness, but it has been a very lively and fun college football season, and it's all wrapping up here in the next couple weekends. So thanks, Matt. Have a safe trip. Enjoy your little bit of free time down there, and we'll talk to you later.
I don't know what it says about me, Rick, that I take a family trip to visit family for the holidays. Then I take my kid to a game on one day off. And then also I'm like, hey, while I'm here, can I cover the Cotton Bowl? I either love my job or I'm crazy or both. But
it's definitely you love your job, a little bit crazy. And, the good thing is you're making a solid college football fan out of your son, which is awesome.
He is more than a solid fan. Just one quick story. We were at Dick's the other day, and we're looking at the hats. And we're looking through, I'm just, okay, what logo is that? Again, he's 4. That's Texas Longhorns. It's Texas A&M, Texas Tech. What about this one? North Texas. What about this one? Texas State. I think he and I were about the only adults the only people in the place who knew what a Texas State logo was. And we asked, my wife and I asked him later, how did you know that was Texas State? Well, I watched him play. Who did you watch them play against? I watched him play against Louisiana. They lost 45-0, of course.
Oh, my. Yeah, that is score included.
Of course, who could forget the 45-0 game on Halloween weekend between Louisiana and Texas State? But
oh, my.
That's my son, and I have done this to him. So I'm sorry, world.
The future college football writer and star of this podcast is being groomed right now as we speak. So that's fantastic. It's a great story and great time to spend with the kids over the holidays. And no, you're not crazy. You love college football and you love your job. So we're happy you do both. But thanks, Matt. We appreciate it. Happy New Year to you. We'll talk to you after the semifinals.
Sure. Thanks, guys.
All right, on tomorrow's podcast, of course, we'll preview the Bucs at the New York Jets. We'll see who might be available to play, who may be coming back from COVID. Certainly, to update the situation with Bruce Arians. So we'll do that. The Lightning are in Sunrise to play Florida. That's always a great rivalry. So we'll look forward to that matchup as well. My thanks again to Matt Baker. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.